We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 7th chapter, verses 1-23. Vena parituṣṣata abhyatai mahābhāho prahasya śūyatam iti. The sage Maitreya said, O mighty armed Vidura, Lord Shiva, being thus pacified by the words of Lord Brahma, spoke as follows in answer to Lord Brahma's request. So before I start today's class, I would like to just give a practical example of what happens to a person who offends a Vaishnava. Recently, one devotee in our temple, she offended a Vaishnava, or several Vaishnavas in Vrindavan. And right now she's in jail. So be very careful. I can tell you a little bit of the history of this person. How she got in jail was she got in a fight with the temple president and was beating him up. And then... Yes, one of our temple presidents.
In front of Prabhupada's house.
And then the chokidars were called, and she started to bite the chokidars. Then someone called the police, and she started to bite the police. And then they found out she had no visa, and she's here illegally. So they put her in jail. But before that, my god sister told me that she had warned her several times not to offend Vaishnavas. It was her habit. In class, sometimes she would challenge the speaker with provocative questions and other things also. So then my god sister warned her, you're in Vrindavan, you have to be very careful not to offend Vaishnavas. And her response was, well, you're offending me, so you should offer your obeisances to me. So my god sister offered obeisances to her and then didn't speak to her anymore. So now she's in jail, and my god sister, I said, was very concerned how to get her out for her welfare. So then I advised to call the embassy. So perhaps the embassy will do something. So anyway, this is a recent event.
That's just now.
Just now. She's in jail. 2 days? 2 days ago. I was just informed today. But when I heard the history of it, she told me she will not listen to anybody. But now she has to listen to somebody. Anyway, we should take it as a warning and not to offend the Vaishnava. Especially in Vrindavan, you get 100 times the reaction. Okay, that could be. It could be, but still that's no... It doesn't just... Yeah, perhaps my first response should be in the mental hospital instead of the jail. But even so, that it should come out in this way.
It should be in the mental hospital in your own country.
Yeah, right. The thing is that to have a mental imbalance that offends Vaishnavas at the same time is very dangerous. But that person was very intelligent. She understood a lot of things philosophically. So therefore she could have understood not to offend the Vaishnavas with her madness. She understood the philosophy, so many philosophical points, how it applied to everyone else, except when it came to her, then it didn't apply. So this is, yeah. Insecurity. Pride comes from insecurity. Yeah. So, here's another comment from Burijan, and very soon you'll be hearing from him also. But anyway, when someone gets angry, we say he's lost his head. So Daksha got angry, and he literally lost his head in the getting angry. So actually, in spiritual life, sometimes it happens that things that are, that you just speak, it happens to you physically also. So you have to be very, very careful about Vaishnava Aparad, about getting angry, about all these things as a devotee in Vrindavan. So Lord Brahma has tried to pacify Lord Shiva in so many ways. So he will be kind to Daksha and to the demigods. He has praised Lord Shiva as creator, maintainer, destroyer. He said, you're just like Super Soul, equal to everyone. You're the father and mother of all creatures. You're the creator of the law of karma, but it seems that the opposite is happening here. And Daksha, he's your representative for performing sacrifice. So how is it that he's killed now by you? And he's appealed to Lord Shiva's Vaishnava nature of forgiveness, explaining that since you're not bewildered, you should forgive those who are bewildered. So today we will hear Lord Shiva's replies to Lord Brahma's prayers of pacification. Verse 2, Lord Shiva said, my dear father, Brahma, I do not mind the offenses created by the demigods, because these demigods are childish and less intelligent. I do not take a serious view of their offenses, and I have punished them only in order to right them. So in the Sanskrit, it's also interesting. Mahadeva uvacha nakam pajesha balanam varnayena nuchintaye deva maya bibhutanam dandas tacha trito maya. So he says, first of all, balanam, they are like my children. Just like Lord Brahma said, you are the father and mother, so you should forgive. So he's saying, yes, it's true. They are my children, these demigods. And then he says, deva maya bibhutanam. They are bewildered. Deva maya bibhutanam. They are bewildered. So, therefore, I should forgive them. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains there are two kinds of punishments. One is that which a conqueror imposes upon an enemy, and the other is like that a father imposes on his son. There is a gulf of difference between these two kinds of punishment. Lord Shiva is by nature a Vaishnava, a great devotee, and his name in this connection is Ashutosh. He's always satisfied, and therefore he did not become angry as if he were an enemy. He is not inimical to any living entity. Rather, he always wishes the welfare of all. Whenever he chastises a person, it is just like a father's punishment of his son. Lord Shiva is like a father because he never takes seriously any offense by any living entities, especially the demigods. So what's an example of Lord Shiva working for the welfare of everyone? How does he work for the welfare of everyone? Blue-throated, Nilakanta. He drank ocean of poison. Yes. Dvaitacharya. As Dvaitacharya, he's the most merciful. Also as Lord Shiva, he uplifts the most fallen. Mm-hmm. Why one should not offend the great personality? He's not offended, but when his wife died, then he got angry. That made him angry.
So my question is, if Shrestha doesn't take offense,
yeah,
and I'm seeing Shrestha doesn't take an offense, why is it advised in the scripture that one should become angry as a offender?
Yes, Mahavendra, wait.
Because the Lord
is the Spirit. Yes. Arjuna was forgiving. But Krishna was angry. He said, no, you have to fight. Krishna does not forgive. Just like in the case of Durvasa Muni. Ambarish was forgiving. He didn't care about the demon, but the Lord was so angry. He said, I cannot help you. You have to go to Ambarish. So this point will be brought up maybe even Monday in the prayers. It's there. That the devotee is tolerant, the devotee forgives, but the Lord does not forgive the offenses. Just like the example, you can tolerate the sun on your head, but not on your feet. So at the Lord's feet are the devotees. So it's more painful for him if a devotee is offended than he himself is offended. The Lord doesn't, the Lord gets upset.
I'm kind of looking at the reason, which is for our own protection in that sense.
What's that? For our protection. Right. We are approving it.
And that's very detrimental to the
Not necessarily. If you tolerate, then you accept. Some devotees are tolerating and accepting. This is Krishna.
No, I mean somebody's being offended. I go along with it.
Oh, somebody else.
Yeah.
Somebody else. Yeah. Then you're in. Yeah. Then you're implicated if you're there on the scene.
Basically, I approve
of
it.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so therefore you have to go away from the place if you don't can't do anything. Verses 3 and 4. Lord Shiva continued, since the head of Daksha has already been burned to ashes, he will have the head of a goat. So now Lord Shiva is replying to Brahma's prayer that please give Daksha, bring him back to life. So, okay, he's going to bring him back to life, but not exactly the same. The demigod known as Bhaga will be able to see his share of sacrifice through the eyes of Mitra. The demigod Pusha will be able to chew only through the teeth of his disciples, and if alone, he'll have to satisfy himself by eating dough made from chickpea flour. But the demigods who have agreed to give me my share of the sacrifice will recover from all their injuries. So Lord Shiva followed Brahma's request, but in his own way. Sometimes when somebody apologizes for an offense and asks for forgiveness, he is forgiven, but there are still some consequences. So Brijan Prabhu gives the example, if we cut ourselves, there's a scar sometimes to remind ourselves not to do it again. So Lord Shiva decided to leave a scar on these people. Yes, okay, you won't get your eyes back, but you will be able to see through these people's eyes. You won't get your teeth back, but you'll be able to eat through your disciples' teeth. And we'll see later on in 6th canto that Daksha's offensive mentality will continue when he curses Narada Muni. So verse 5, those who have had their arms cut off will have to work with the arms of Ashwini Kumara. And those whose hands were cut off will have to do their work with the hands of Pusha. The priests will also have to act in that manner. As for Bhrigu, he will have the beard from the goat's head. So these are the scars. But he won't have this big prestige now of being the great Brahmin. He has a goat's beard, so he can't be proud, actually, of that. So now verse 5, purport. Very interesting purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here Prabhupada says about how the brain substance is not the cause of intelligence. What is the proof that brain substance is not the cause?
He was able to use Daksha's goat's head.
Yes, he was the same Daksha when he was brought to consciousness, but he had a goat's head. I mean, the brain is not the same in a goat's head as in a man's head. But he was able to function in the same way. So let's read here what Prabhupada says. Bhrigu Muni, a great supporter of Daksha, was awarded the beard of the goat's head, which was substituted for the head of Daksha. It appears from the exchange of Daksha's head that the modern scientific theory that the brain substance is the cause of all intelligent work is not valid. Well, if it's not the brain substance, my question is, then, what is it?
Consciousness.
That's what Prabhupada says. It's the consciousness that's the source of intelligence, not the brain substance. Interesting. 32 ounce, yeah. According to this purport, let's read on. The brain substance of Daksha and that of a goat are different, but Daksha still acted like himself, even though his head was replaced by that of a goat. Conclusion is that it is the particular consciousness of an individual soul which acts. The brain substance is only an instrument which has nothing to do with real intelligence. It's interesting. Yashoda was telling me, or she told us in that last seminar about mind mapping, that there was one child who was considered retarded or dyslexic or something, that he couldn't learn. So then the teacher started teaching him mind mapping. And then the child just exploded with ideas and so many things. And that the child never knew he had. So it's quite interesting. Here, the brain substance is only an instrument. It has nothing to do. So if the brain substance is only an instrument, then what is intelligence? So intelligence is dependent upon consciousness, you're saying then, real intelligence. So real intelligence confirmed in the third chapter of what? Of the Gita.
That's by purified intelligence, you can, by purified Krishna consciousness, you can control the mind and the senses.
By purified intelligence, you can control the mind and the senses.
The intelligence is the next door, able to
soul. To the soul.
If the soul is Krishna consciousness, it influences the intelligence, which can then in turn control the mind.
Right. So what do we do in our, how can we practically apply this in our Krishna consciousness? How can we increase our intelligence? Since it doesn't depend on the brain, then how can we enhance or increase? Yeah.
By trying to be situated in the mode of goodness.
Okay, try to be situated in the mode of goodness.
By in that mode, then constantly asking for Krishna's mercy.
Constantly asking for Krishna's mercy for purification. Yes.
Remaining always in direct contact with Krishna.
Remaining always in direct contact with Krishna. How you do that?
Well,
chanting.
His name.
Remembrance. Yes.
Always remembering
Krishna. Okay. And yes.
In
the mood of devotion. Remembering Krishna. Asking for service. Okay, intelligence will come. He was first. The instrument, okay.
I can see the source of the instrument actually comes from Krishna.
Yes.
But the instrument is here. So if I change these eyes and I put the eyes of another animal, suppose the animal cannot see certain colors.
Right.
So the instrument is there, the ability to see is there, but still I can see through that instrument.
So he's saying, well, there should be some difference in different instruments.
Yeah, so sure, but we are talking about intelligence, not about the sense perception.
Yeah. No, but he's giving that as an example.
Yes, 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 the brain is the instrument for intelligence. So you have, maybe you have another computer now, which is different from the previous one.
Right.
Even though you can have the same problem, maybe the speed or something is different.
So he's saying you're just changing computers here. You may have a different one. Like now he's got a goat's computer, Daksha. But okay. So there should be some difference, you're saying. Now Daksha changed his head. So there should be some difference because it's a goat's brain.
I would think that the program is the same and the power supply is the same.
Yes, but maybe the potency, the memory, the capacity is different.
Capacity is different. So then, okay, so this proves that what Prabhupada is saying, that he has a goat's head, everything's different, but he's got the same intelligence as when he had a man's head. So how is that?
His point is that it should be different.
It should be, but why isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not. It should be different, but it's not different. I mean, of course, he's got the goat's head. It should be different, right? He should think like a goat, right? Yeah, but it Prabhupada says it's not changed. It's completely the same. So why is that? Okay, 1, 2, 3. Okay, so she's saying that intelligence is not in the brain, it's in the heart. Okay, that's another discussion. Right. Yes, that is confirming what she said. Okay, very good. Next is Sankirtan. Sarvasya chaham, okay, yes. 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 Paramatma. If we remember second canto that we studied, Paramatma is the form of, what is it, the form direction of intelligence. So that's why these animals know where to go, because how do they know? It's Paramatma. That's where intelligence is actually coming from. We have no intelligence. Whatever we have, we think it's ours, but actually it's borrowed. It's coming from Paramatma. Whatever we borrow, this body, we borrow this mind, we borrow everything, and we think it's ours, but actually it's not ours. Yeah.
The question may be material intelligent, or spiritual intelligent. And a material intelligent person uses the intelligence to define the existence of God.
Right.
And the problem is, where is that intelligence coming from? All these arguments against the existence of God.
Yes. Yeah, all the arguments against God, it also comes from Krishna. Okay, you're number three and you're number four. Wait, three. You've been normal.
Yeah.
And no brain.
Brain was somebody else.
He had no brain. So, quite interesting. Okay, he's number four and you're number six. Yes. What's that?
He was empowered.
He was empowered, yes. He was the chief of Prajapatis.
Now he's redeeming himself.
He's coming back. He's got his power by the mercy of Lord Shiva. By the mercy of Lord Shiva, he restored his power. Yes. Okay, Anand Vrindavan.
Hello. Well, if the problem says brain substance is not the cause of intelligence, and you see, and I guess it depends what you define as intelligent, because Yaksha was intelligent, so when he got the head body, he remained intelligent, but some people aren't so intelligent, or isn't that, so they don't have that much intelligence in their soul originally, and they're all spiritually equal.
So why? What is your question actually? That why does somebody have less intelligence and somebody has more? What is it dependent?
Well, is it that just by becoming a purely advanced devotee, you automatically become intelligent? And then I guess it depends on what you define as intelligence. Because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj said it's very specific, super intelligent.
Right. So your question is why are there different grades of or what are there? Yeah, I know. I don't either. Trying to figure it out.
Well,
okay, Sankirtan knows.
You're saying I have the answer. It's karma. Yeah, because of karma, a person has more or less intelligence. He's conducted under the supervision of the super soul.
Right.
But the question is, another question is, which I have, why is a brahmachari who is a brahmachari so intelligent, it says, because his brain is being nourished. So, it seems the brain has something to do with intelligence.
Yeah, the brain has something to do, but when you come to spiritual life, then everything, your prarabdha karma is not considered. You may go beyond your prarabdha karma.
Even Prabhupada says when you drink milk, it nourishes the spiritual brain.
Right.
So it means the organ itself seems to have a function of how intelligent we are.
Yes. Anyway,
okay,
we're going to have to go on. You'll take Adi Purusha because he was the last in the line, and then we'll go on.
There are different examples of religious science. Some examples show what Ramadananda is saying.
Okay. There are people without brains.
There are people with half a brain.
Half a brain.
Or there are people with severe injuries, like steel rod.
In their brain. Okay. Right.
So their character deteriorated, but they were functioning as normal.
Uh-huh. Their character deteriorated, but they were functioning as normal. Okay, we're going to have to go on now, and we'll continue this discussion after we finish all the verses, because I'm a bit behind. So if you still have something to say, we'll wait till after. We'll just keep it, and we'll go to the end of the class, because otherwise I won't make it. So we're here in the purport. You can think about all your questions and all your answers about this topic, and we'll have another discussion after the lecture. So Prabhupada says, the real intelligence, mind, and consciousness are part of the particular individual soul. It will be found in the verses ahead that after Daksha's head was replaced by the goat's head, he was as intelligent as he had previously been. He prayed very nicely to satisfy Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, which is not possible for a goat to do. Therefore, it is definitely concluded that the brain substance is not the center of intelligence. It is the consciousness of a particular soul that works intelligently. The whole movement of Krishna consciousness is to purify the consciousness. It doesn't matter what kind of brain one has, because if he simply transfers his consciousness from matter to Krishna, his life becomes successful. It is confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita that anyone who takes up Krishna consciousness achieves the highest perfection of life, regardless of whatever abominable condition of life he may have fallen into. Specifically, anyone in Krishna consciousness goes back to Godhead, back to home, and leaving his present material body. So, there are some examples. What are some examples of where the brain substance doesn't matter in Krishna consciousness? From scripture? Yeah. Gaura Kishordas Babaji. He was illiterate. He could not spell his name. And yet he composed choicest poetry. Okay? South Indian Brahmin, reading Bhagavad Gita, who pleased Lord Chaitanya. Yes? Gajendra the elephant, who prayed very nicely, although he was in a very low class body. Prahlad Maharaj as a child, Dhruva Maharaj as a child. Children, 5 year olds, what can they know? Yes? Mun Vaishya Shudras. Right. So these are all examples. The dog of Shivananda Sen. That's right. So therefore, we should be very happy because there's no material disqualification for Krishna consciousness. Everyone can please Krishna. So verse 6. The great sage Maitreya said, "My dear Vidura, all the personalities present were very much satisfied in heart and soul upon hearing the words of Lord Shiva, who is the best among the benedictors." So Prabhupada in the purport gives a nice example how Lord Shiva is the best benedictor in spiritual life. This is the poor Brahmin who came to worship Lord Shiva, and he said he wanted the best thing. And he said, "You please go to see Sanatana Goswami." He went there and informed him, "Lord Shiva has sent me to seek the best benediction." So Sanatana had the touchstone, which he kept in the garbage. And on the request of the Brahmin, he gave him the touchstone, and the Brahmin was very happy. Now he could get as much gold as he wanted simply by touching touchstone to iron. But after he left Sanatana, he thought, if a touchstone is the best benediction, why has Sanatana Goswami kept it in the garbage? So he returned and asked Sanatana Goswami, "Sir, if this is the best benediction, why did you keep it in the garbage?" Sanatana Goswami informed him, "Actually, this is not the best benediction, but are you prepared to take the best benediction from me?" Brahmana said, "Yes, sir, Lord Shiva has sent me to you for the best benediction." So he asked him, "Please throw the touchstone in the water and come back." So he came back and he gave him Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Thus, by the benediction of Lord Shiva, the Brahmin got the association of the best devotee of Lord Krishna. Was thus initiated in Mahamantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So again, we have Maha Mantra. So many times in these purports, Srila Prabhupada brings Maha Mantra. Verse 7. Thereafter, Bhrigu, the chief of the great sages, invited Lord Shiva to come to the sacrificial arena. Thus, the demigods, accompanied by the sages, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, all went to the place where the great sacrifice was being performed. So in the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, there is a common phrase, Shiva Hina Yajna. What does that mean? Shiva Hina Yajna. Without Shiva, any sacrifice is baffled. Prabhupada says, Lord Vishnu is Yageshwara, Supreme Personality in the matter of sacrifice. Yet in each Yajna, it is necessary for all the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, to be present. What about Sankirtan Yajna? We don't worship, we worship the demigods through the chanting.
I guess also we chant Krishna Chaitanya.
Yes. Everybody's included. In this age, we can't do all these other things, as Prabhupada said so many times. So verse 8, after everything was executed exactly as directed by Lord Shiva, Daksha's body was joined to the head of the animal meant to be killed in the sacrifice. When the animal's head was fixed on the body of King Daksha, Daksha was immediately brought to consciousness, and as he awakened from sleep, the king saw Lord Shiva standing before him. Actually, I want to go back to verse 8, because that was an interesting purport. This time, all the demigods and great sages were very careful not to irritate Lord Shiva. Therefore, whatever he asked was done. Specifically said here, Daksha's body was joined to the head of an animal, a goat. Okay, you want the head of a goat for Daksha? No problem. Whatever you say. This time they're not going to make him angry. So, okay, goat's head for Daksha. Verse 9. So now he's revived to consciousness and he's seeing Lord Shiva. Prabhupada says in the middle of the purport, Daksha came back to consciousness again. This indicates that consciousness is also individual. Daksha actually took another body when he took on the head of a goat. So now it's his second birth as a half goat, half man. But because consciousness is individual, his consciousness remained the same, although his bodily condition changed. Thus, bodily construction has nothing to do with development of consciousness. Consciousness is carried with the transmigration of the soul. There are many instances of this in Vedic history, such as in the case of Maharaj Bharat. Of course, normally, your consciousness determines your next body. But if you're a devotee, then it may not be the same. It may not happen. So, consciousness. Yeah, whatever you're thinking of, whatever you've developed at the time of death, to that state you will go. Whatever your consciousness. Yeah, if you're going towards Krishna, you'll go towards Krishna.
But even if you have to take another material body,
right,
your inclination will also be
there. Right, that will be there. So the arrangement, let's see, this is the end of the purport. The arrangement by the Lord is so nice that if a person's consciousness is turned, just what you say, into Krishna consciousness, there is no doubt in his next life he will be a great devotee of Krishna, even if he's offered a different type of body. So we even see sometimes animals, they're very attracted to Krishna consciousness. They will come for Mangalarti and so many things. Come for darshan. In Vrindavan you can see also, outside of Vrindavan, in our farm. Yeah, well, for prasad, of course. So verse 10. Verse 9.
Last sentence. One of the other Srila Prabhupada doesn't say this person should go back to Krishna. He just keeps on taking another body into Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. Well, he said that somewhere else, didn't he? Back to Godhead. Eventually. He will go back to Krishna. Matter of time. If you're on the path, then you keep going. Verse 10. At that time, when Daksha saw Lord Shiva, who rides upon a bull, his heart, which was polluted by envy of Lord Shiva, was immediately cleansed, just as the water in a lake is cleansed by autumn rains. So here again, Lord Shiva is called auspicious. Prabhupada says in the purport, here's an example of why Lord Shiva is called auspicious. So what is this example? Why is Lord Shiva called auspicious here? Because Daksha got purified immediately just by seeing him. Does anybody remember the previous references about Lord Shiva being auspicious? In the 4th chapter, in the 6th chapter, there were references. Loka Mangalam. Yesterday we heard Loka Mangalam. And Sati was saying Shiva. The word Shiva means all auspicious. So the word Shiva is the same as this. He purifies all sins. And yesterday we heard Loka Mangalam, that he is auspicious for all living entities. And why is that? because he is always engaged in devotional service. So that is what he's teaching everyone. If you take shelter of Shiva, then you will be engaged in devotional service. He's teaching as a Vaishnava, all conditioned souls, how to engage in devotional service, and therefore he's Lokamangalam. Verse 11, King Daksha wanted to offer prayers to Lord Shiva, but as he remembered the ill-fated death of his daughter Sati, his eyes filled with tears, and in bereavement his voice choked up, and he could not say anything. At this time, King Daksha, afflicted by love and affection, was very much awakened to his real senses. With great endeavor, he pacified his mind, checked his feelings, and with pure consciousness began to offer prayers to Lord Shiva. King Daksha said, Bhuyannanugraha aho bhavata pito me dandastayame pito yadapi palatta na brahma bandhu suchavam bhagavan navagya tubhyam marishcha kuta eva titaveteshu. King Daksha said, my dear Lord Shiva, I committed a great offense against you, but you are so kind that instead of withdrawing your mercy, you have done me a great favor by punishing me. You and Lord Vishnu never neglect even useless, unqualified Brahmins. Why then should you neglect me, who am engaged in performing sacrifices? So now, Daksha is saying, this punishment you gave me, this is showing how you're not neglecting me. You killed me, that shows that you're merciful to me. You're not neglecting me. Well, what a thing to say. That you're killing me, this is very good for me, that you killed me. But what is the proof, actually, that it's good? Yes. Change of heart. His heart was changed by this action of Lord Shiva. So there's an example. Oh, that's not an example, I won't give it. So, but actually we saw in fourth chapter that previously Daksha was very hard-hearted. There was a Sanskrit word, Durmarsha Hridaya. Durmarsha Hridaya, very hard-hearted. And Brahma Druk, unworthy to be called a Brahman, because he allowed Sati to kill herself right in front of him. Very hard-hearted. And he didn't stop her. So this is the proof that he got a change of heart. And just imagine, you say thank you to someone who killed you. He brings you back to life, of course, so that's good. But somebody comes and kills you, and you're very thankful for that. And that's your punishment. It's very nice. So that was how his mentality has changed so much from thinking that Lord Shiva is his inferior, Lord Shiva is, he has offended him, and now he kills him, and he thinks, oh, this is very good. So it's quite a change of heart. Verse 14, I'll read the Sanskrit again. Vidyatapavattataranmukataswavipram brahmatmatattamavitum patamam tamasra tatpamanam paramasavivipat supasi palapashunivavivopagihitadanta. My dear great and powerful Lord Shiva, you were created first from the mouth of Lord Brahma in order to protect the brahmanas in pursuing education, austerities, vows, and self-realization. As a protector of the brahmanas, you always protect the regulative principles they follow, just as a cowherd boy keeps a stick in his hand to give protection to the cows. So this is one of the meanings of the word Pashupati. So I have it up on the flip chart. I also have it on this small board here. The meanings of Pashupati, which Srila Prabhupada gives in the purport. So in sentence 2, Srila Prabhupada says, Lord Shiva is called Pashupati because he protects the living entities in their developed consciousness so that they may follow the Vedic system of Varna and Ashram. So those who are following Varnashram and they're making advancement, they are protected by Lord Shiva. That's one meaning of Pashupati. The word Pashu refers to animal as well as to human entity. It is stated here Lord Shiva is always interested in protecting the animals and the animalistic living entities who are not very advanced in the spiritual sense. So here's another meaning of Pashupati, protector of animals and protector of human animals, who are like less than animals, not a Pashu. So here's another meaning of Pashupati. Then in the purport at the end of paragraph 1, Prabhupada says, Lord Shiva is known as Pashupati, the protector of the Brahmins and other living entities. He protects them from the attacks of non-Brahmins or uncultured persons who are against the self-realization process. So sometimes if you're on Harinam or distributing books and somebody attacks you and you get protected, then that's Lord Shiva who's protecting you. He protects the Brahmins from the attacks of uncultured persons. Paragraph 2, in the beginning, another feature of this word is that persons who are simply attached to the ritualistic portion of the Vedas and do not understand the situation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are not any more advanced than animals. So not only are human beings who behave like animals are animals, but those who follow the ritualistic part of the Vedas and don't understand Krishna, just like Prabhupada said, they're like chained animals, he said in Krishna book. So in the beginning, Srimad Bhagavatam, it is confirmed, even though one performs the rituals of the Vedas, if he does not develop a sense of Krishna consciousness, then all his labor in performing Vedic rituals is considered to be simply a waste of time. What's that verse in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam? Prabhupada is paraphrasing. Dharma swanastita punsan. Note padayat yadiratim shama eva hi kevalam. If you don't get attachment for Krishna in your ritual, when you're performing all your duties, useless labor only. Useless. So this is Divarnasham without Krishna is useless. So now again in the purport, paragraph 2, in the middle, Prabhupada says, and also Daksha says, Lord Shiva's punishment was just like that of a cowherd boy who keeps a stick to frighten his animals. So now Daksha is saying, I'm just like one of your cows. And you're having your stick, and by using your stick against me, you're protecting me. Because the cowherd boy, sometimes he uses the stick, the cows are going off to some dangerous place, it's not good for them. So he has to use the stick to bring them back. So that's what Shiva has done to Daksha. He's like a cowherd boy, he's brought Daksha back with his stick, the stick danda. Danda means stick or punishment. So then again, at the end of the purport, persons who are simply attached to Vedic rituals without further advancement of devotional service or Krishna consciousness are almost like animals, and Lord Shiva is in charge of giving them protection and sometimes punishing them as he punished Daksha. So Lord Shiva is also in charge of those Brahmins. He's a protector of those Brahmins who are cursing him and cursing his followers. Yes, Sankirtan Prabhu. Yes, that's fact. He would have, actually I think this will come later on, that Daksha, by his offenses, would have suffered in hell for countless...
Eternity.
What's that?
For eternity.
For?
Eternity.
For eternity, yes. He would have suffered in hell for eternity had Lord Shiva not corrected him and given him this punishment. So this is a punishment to save him from his Vaishnava, from the reactions. As Lord Chaitanya said, 88 lakhs, punishments for Vaishnava aparad, and the first is leprosy.
It's not really Shiva who feels like good, why are you doing that to me?
No.
No, it's doing so bad for himself.
Yes, he's concerned for the welfare of Daksha, and so he's correcting him. And that's what Daksha is seeing himself now. That's how Daksha feels. You saved me from this punishment. Verse 15. Yo sa maya viditata tarisha sabhayam kshipto jirukti vishikavi kanayatamam arvakpatantamahatam nindayapad vidishtyadaya sabhagavan sakritena tushyet. I did not know your full glories. For this reason, I threw arrows of sharp words at you in the open assembly, although you did not take them into account. I was going down to hell, because of my disobedience to you, who are the most respectable personality, but you took compassion upon me and saved me by awarding punishment. I request that you be pleased by your own mercy, since I cannot satisfy you by my words." So what a change from the previous daksha. How he's changed that he's thanking Lord Shiva for killing him, for punishing him. And before, because Lord Shiva didn't stand up to offer him respect, he was very angry. So it was just complete change of consciousness, change of heart. Not according to Srila Prabhupada. This is, had nothing to do with the goat's brain. Parvati Mataji said, "You sure this didn't have something to do with the goat's brain?" Yeah. Well, the goat couldn't offer such nice prayers to Lord Shiva. Anyway, Prabhupada says, and Bhagavatam says, that because he saw Lord Shiva standing before him, he was purified. And that's how he got the change of heart. When he saw Lord Shiva, and he remembered his previous sinful activities. So Prabhupada in the purport, as usual, "A devotee in an adverse condition of life accepts such a condition to be the mercy of the Lord. Factually, the insulting words used by Daksha against Lord Shiva were enough to have him thrown perpetually into a hellish life. But Lord Shiva, being kind toward him, awarded him punishment to neutralize the offense." So you have to be really careful when you offend a Vaishnava, because I saw also in the story of Rasika Nanda that he didn't correct the person. Some devotees made aparad offense to him, and just so he didn't correct them, and so they suffered. So then he didn't show his mercy to them by correcting them, and so they suffered greatly because of that. That he's somewhere in the line of Lord Chaitanya. Shamananda Pandit's main disciple. So there's a book about his life. And sometimes he would correct people and sometimes he wouldn't. He would just let them. But then they realized, of course, when they were dying in their deathbed, that it was because they had offended him. Yeah.
There's a famous story of Bhakti Thakur.
Who? Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Yes. One day he came back home and he told Vinod Prasad, "Your elder brother is really suffering, he's about to die."
Mm-hmm.
So he just had talked to him that morning and he told Vinod, "Your brother told me it's because he has offended you." So then Vinod Prasad was the one called and he said, "No, this is my big brother, how can you offend me? Listen to me, listen." So Bhakti Thakur told him, "I think you should go."
Mm-hmm.
So he went to the deathbed of his big brother. And the big brother apologized. He said, "I have offended you and I'm burning with that."
Mm-hmm.
So he apologized and he died.
Wow. Okay, so story of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's eldest son, older?
Not the eldest.
One son who was on his deathbed. And Bhaktivinoda told Bhaktisiddhanta that he says that he has offended you and that's why he's suffering, so you should go to him. Yeah, he was just a small boy, Bimla Prasad. So he went to the brother. First he said, "No, how can he offend me? He's just my older brother." But then he went and the brother said, "I've offended you and now I'm burning inside, so please forgive me." And then he died. So you can even be in the family of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and not be exempt. So we should never think that because we have been a devotee for so many years or et cetera, that we are exempt from Vaishnava aparad. It's always there. Something that a devotee has to be very careful of. So here, Lord Shiva awarded him punishment to neutralize the offense. King Daksha realized this and, feeling obliged for Lord Shiva's magnanimous behavior, wanted to show his gratitude. Sometimes a father punishes his child, and when the child is grown up and comes to his senses, he understands the father's punishment was not actually punishment, but mercy. So this Sachinandan Swami told a story in class about this, that his father used to let him do whatever he wanted to do. He was very free with him. But Satchinanda Swami was always, when he was a young boy, he was always climbing up trees and doing very dangerous things. So one time he did such a thing, and his father would never correct him. So one time he climbed up a tree and he fell down and he broke his arms. He was in the hospital all bandaged up, and his father came to see him. And his father said, "Well, I'm sorry, I have to do this." And then he just started slapping him. And then they were both crying. But then Satchinanda Swami never forgot it. And after that, he didn't climb trees again.
But he said, "I started to climb on the mountains."
He climbed the mountains instead. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. The mother. And then he became a murderer. And then at the end, just before they were going to kill him, he asked, "What is your last request?" They asked him, "What's your last request?" He said, "Call my mother, I want to tell her something." Then he bit off her ear. He said, "This is for not correcting me when I was a child. That's why I'm here today." So anyway, these are the examples. A father punishes his child, and his child is grown up, he understands the father's punishment was not actually punishment, but mercy. Similarly, Daksha appreciated the punishment offered to him by Lord Shiva as a manifestation of Lord Shiva's mercy. That is a symptom of a person making progress on the path of Krishna consciousness. It is said, a devotee in Krishna consciousness never takes any miserable condition of life to be condemnation by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He accepts the miserable condition to be the grace of the Lord. He thinks, "I would have been punished or put into a more dangerous condition of life due to my past misdeeds, but the Lord has protected me. Thus I have received only a little punishment as token execution of the law of karma." Thinking of his grace in that way, a devotee always surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead more and more seriously and is not disturbed by such so-called punishment. So that Prabhupada is telling us, this should be our mentality. When somebody chastises or punishes us, someone who is like your guru, if your guru chastises you, then this is how we should accept it. Just like the Kumaras were chastising Jayan Vijay with a smiling face, Jayan Vijay accepted. This is how you accept your chastisement. So this is what, just give me one example of a devotee giving punishment besides this one to somebody who is later benefited by such punishment. Is there an example in Krishna Lila or any Lila? Yes. Yes, Narada Muni cursed Nala Kuvera and Manigriva to be trees. But by that curse, they got to see Lord Krishna and became purified. Anybody else? That's the one I was thinking of too. Narada Muni was cursed to travel everywhere. Oh, Haribo. It's too bad you weren't here earlier, but we'll continue the discussion for you after class we were having before. I'm sure you'd be interested in it. Okay? So let's go on. Verse 16. The great sage Maitreya said, "Thus being pardoned by Lord Shiva, King Daksha, with the permission of Lord Brahma, again began the performance of the yajna, along with the great learned sages, the priest, and others. Thereafter, in order to resume the activities of sacrifice, the brahmanas first arranged to purify the sacrificial arena of the contamination caused by the touch of Virbhadra and the other ghostly followers of Lord Shiva. Then they arranged to offer into the fire the oblations known as Purodasha." So how did they purify? What was their method of purification of the arena? Only one way, Prabhupada says. Only one way you can purify this. Yeah. Vishnu?
Yajna.
Yajna? There's something else in the purport.
Holy name.
Holy name, specifically. Specifically. Prabhupada says, although Lord Shiva was present and he is all auspicious, it was still necessary to sanctify the place because his followers had broken into the arena and committed so many obnoxious acts. That sanctification was possible only by chanting the holy name of Vishnu, Chikapala, which can sanctify the three worlds. This is near the end of the purport. Near the end. In other words, it is admitted herein, the followers of Lord Shiva are generally unclean. They are not even very hygienic. They do not take baths regularly. They wear long hair and they smoke ganja. Persons of such irregular habits are counted amongst the ghosts. Since they were present in the sacrificial arena, the atmosphere became polluted and had to be sanctified by Chi Kapala oblations, which indicated the invocation of Vishnu's favor. So whenever you're in doubt, chant the holy name. If you need to purify something, chant the holy name. We'll see this also. So this is actually, I saw this as a theme, one of the themes, the holy name. It will come again also in Dhruva Maharaj's Leela, when he meets the Vishnu Dutas and he forgets how to receive them in his confusion. He simply chants the holy name and that pleases them and that is sufficient. So we should always remember the holy name. Verse 18. Why not?
Well, this particular holy name was
Chikapala. Chikapala.
And the method was...
Whatever. But the principle is... Prabhupada is talking about the principle of the thing. You can choose whatever name you want. They may not have chanted Hare Krishna, but the principle is to chant the name of Vishnu. And of course, we know that the name of Krishna is more powerful than thousand names of Vishnu. It's more powerful. So for us, better we chant Hare Krishna than Tri Kapala. Although technically that may be the name you chant in the sacrifice. Okay, we'll go on. Verse 18. The great sage Maitreya said to Vidura, "My dear Vidura, as soon as King Daksha offered the clarified butter with the Ajurveda mantras and sanctified meditation, Lord Vishnu appeared there in his original form as Narayan." So Prabhupada said, here's an interesting realization or something, comment. Prabhupada said that by chanting the mantras with devotion, that was in, this purport... In service, yes. In the purport of 18, if you chant the mantras, required mantras in service, in a devotional mood, you can see Vishnu. So when we chant the holy name of Krishna, the first realization is Rupa. We will see the form of the Lord. So this is also stated here. Verse 19. Lord Narayan was seated on the shoulder of Stotra, or Garuda, who had big wings. As soon as the Lord appeared, all directions were illuminated, diminishing the luster of Brahma and the others present. So why is Garuda called Stotra?
Because it's two wings.
It's two wings. One is Brihat, Samaved, and the other? Samaved is the best Veda. So when he flaps his wings, then you can hear the Samaved. And what is the essence of Samaved? As Srila Prabhupada says, this was in the third canto, we heard this. Chanting the holy name. Yeah, here it's Brihat and Ratantra, Samaved. The essence of the Samaved is Hare Krishna, Maha Mantra. And that's Prabhupada said that Kardama heard Garuda chanting Hare Krishna by flapping his wings when he carried the Lord back to Vaikuntha. Prabhupada says, this is 321.34, that when Kardama was watching the Lord, Garuda carrying the Lord back to Vaikuntha, he heard the flapping of his wings, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So that's what he heard. Prabhupada explained that to us in that purport. So verse 20. Shama Hiranya Vashamarka Kirita Justo Nilalaka Pramaramandita Kundalasya Shankabja Chaka Shara Chapa Gadasi Charma Vyakraya Hiranmaya Puja Iva Karnikara. His complexion was blackish, his garment yellow like gold, and his helmet as dazzling as the sun. His hair was bluish, the color of black bees, and his face was decorated with earrings. His eight hands held a conch shell, wheel, club, lotus flower, arrow, bow, shield, and sword. And they were decorated with golden ornaments, such as bangles and bracelets. His whole body resembled a blossoming tree beautifully decorated with various kinds of flowers. So eight-handed form of Vishnu appeared here in this sacrifice. Prabhupada explains in purport, the face of Lord Vishnu, as described in this verse, appears like a lotus flower with bees humming over it. When I was pujari in Calcutta, we used to have many, many lotus flowers decorating the deities, and I always would put one on the end of Krishna's flute, and it was almost as big as Krishna's head. It's like this big lotus flower. And every day, or almost every day, there would be this huge black bee that would come and sit inside that lotus flower. And sometimes he would come to Bhagavatam class and just go around while we were having Bhagavatam class. But often he would just go inside the lotus flowers on the deities. And then we had Radha Govinda, and then we also had two altars. The other altar was Jagannath. So on Radha Govinda's altar, we would have these big, huge bumblebees. And on Jagannath's altar, we had very small bees. And they would sit on the garlands, just on Jagannath's garlands. They would just sit there. So it was quite interesting scene. It was like Vaikuntha, like the descriptions in the Bhagavatam. So anyway, yeah, we had those bees. Because we had a back window. The deity room was open. There was a back window, no screen. They could just fly in anytime. Also bats would sometimes come. But the bees were very nice. So then here it says, so Krishna's face is like that. Krishna's face is like a lotus flower with bees humming around it. All of the ornaments on the body of Lord Vishnu resemble molten gold of the reddish gold color of the morning sunrise. The Lord appears just as the morning sun rises to protect the whole universal creation. His arms display different weapons, and his eight hands are compared to the eight petals of a lotus flower. So who would have thought that eight arms with weapons are compared to eight petals of a lotus? Eight petals. All the weapons mentioned are for the protection of his devotees. Generally, in the four hands of Vishnu, there are wheel, club, conch shell, and lotus flower. These four symbols are seen in the four hands of Vishnu in different arrangements. Club and the wheel are the Lord's symbols of punishment for the demons and miscreants, and the lotus flower and conch shell are used to bless the devotees. There are always two classes of men, devotees and demons. As confirmed in Gita, Pariktanaya Sadhanam, Lord is always ready for the protection of the devotees and annihilation of the demons. So a very nice purport explaining more what the verse is about. Srila Prabhupada. Bhakshasyati shitavatur vanamal yadara Asasvaloka kalaya ramayanscha vishvam Ashva pramatya janacha madaracha hamsa Shetata patta shashina pariracha mana. Verse 21. Lord Vishnu looked extraordinarily beautiful because the goddess of fortune and a garland were situated on his chest. His face was beautifully decorated with a smiling attitude which can captivate the entire world, especially the devotees. Fans of white hair appeared on both sides of the Lord like white swans, and the white canopy overhead looked like the moon. So if you see fans on two sides of the Lord, what does that mean? Yeah, there's devotees there. He didn't come alone. The fans aren't just going to fan him all by themselves. Of course, they could in the spiritual world, but it's not how it's usually done. The fans, the devotees use the fans and fan the Lord. So we've got devotees here who have accompanied him. So again, the purport. The smiling face of Lord Vishnu is pleasing to the whole world. Not only devotees, but even non-devotees are attracted by such a smile. This verse nicely describes how the sun, moon, eight-petaled lotus flower. And before I read that, someone told me, it was you who told me, Bhagavat, that you were showing the installation ceremony video to some person who is not a devotee. And what was their comment?
Oh, it's so beautiful.
So beautiful. So even for non-devotees, the Lord is beautiful. The Lord is very beautiful. He's attractive. This verse nicely describes how the sun, moon, eight-petaled lotus flower, and humming black bees were represented by the fans of hair, the overhead canopy, the moving earrings at both sides of his face, and his blackish hair. So I hope you follow that and put them together. All together, accompanied by the conch shell, wheel, club, lotus flower, bow, arrow, shield, and sword in his hands, these presented a grand and beautiful audience for Lord Vishnu, which captivated all the demigods there, including Daksha and Lord Brahma. So this scene is appropriate to time, place, and circumstance. Because we have demigods here, they want to see the opulence of the Lord. They want to see the chamaras and the swords and the bows. But for the devotees of Vrindavan, if they saw something like this, it wouldn't be very attractive for them. The gopis, when they saw Lord Narayan, where's Krishna? Have you seen Krishna? What's attractive for them is the peacock feather, the flute, the garland. So according to the mentality of the devotee, the Lord appears. Didn't we learn a verse last year that says that? Diyoga paribhavita ritsaroja. Ase shitekshita pato nanonata pata yad 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 tuyakuravayanti tadadiyavapur parayase saranugrahaya. According to your mercy, you appear in the form that the devotee wants to see you. So the demigods were so attracted by this form of Lord Vishnu. Very attractive. Just for the demigods and the sages who were present in that sacrifice. So verse 22, as soon as Lord Vishnu was visible, all the demigods, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, Gandharvas, and all present there, immediately offered their respectful obeisances by falling down straight before him. Tad Vishnu, Prabhupada says, Tad Vishnu paramam padam sada pashanti suraya. He is the supreme personality of Godhead. So there was some lila in Krishna lila also where the demigods came and they were worshipping Krishna in the form of a cowherd boy. And then they left and the cowherd boys came and they saw all the fans and chamras that they left and they were just playfully worshipping Krishna with him. It's quite a different mood. Quite a different mood. The demigods. Verse 23. In the presence of the glaring effulgence of the bodily luster of Narayan, everyone else's luster faded away, and everyone stopped speaking. Fearful with awe and veneration, all present touched their hands to their heads and prepared to offer their prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Adhok Saja. So a very grand scene he is presenting. They're all afraid, awe and veneration. The Lord has appeared. So so I'd like to stop here, but I just want to ask one question before we get into other discussions. And my question is that I found it in these verses today that we learn there are many, many lessons Prabhupada was giving in the purports and in the verses. There are many, many lessons to learn in these 23 verses. So I just want to ask you, what lessons do we learn from these purports and verses? I found 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lessons that we learn. Yes?
So heart can be changed.
Heart can be changed. Very good. That was not on my list. Heart can be changed. Yes? That's like same. Bhakti is very powerful. So you're telling what changes the heart. Yes, Hari Purush. Even if one's offense or aparad is rectified, there is still a scar. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Poverty.
There's no material disqualification.
No material disqualification for coming to Krishna consciousness. Anybody else? Yeah.
Intelligence has nothing to do with the brain.
Spiritual intelligence. has nothing to do with the brain. Marangopa. Devotee sees obstacles. What did you say? Obstacles? Difficulties as opportunities for advancement in Krishna consciousness. Yes, thank you, Thomas. Okay.
And that was very detrimental to his own spiritual progress, and he is punished.
Okay, so Daksha had a different angle. His angle has changed. Therefore, he's punished.
So it says if when he sees Bhakshimi, veneration.
With veneration and respect.
That's a proper
way. That is the proper way to see Lord Shiva. He had a belittling attitude, and now it's changed to awe and veneration and respect. And punishment is given, so just so he will have this realization. Now that's a good lesson. Prashanta. They all got less than what they should have gotten. Because of the mercy of the pure devotees. Okay? Yes. Okay? Lord Shiva is auspicious for all living entities. If we see him with love, then we will get change of heart. Okay? So all the very inauspicious things that happened in the arena was purified by chanting the holy name. Very simple purification process. Okay, I even have some more here. Shiva Hina Yajna. Prabhupada said, without Lord Shiva, the sacrifice cannot be complete. Another one is, Lord Shiva's blessings are like a father to a child. Lord Shiva's punishment and blessings. And although Brahma was praising Lord Shiva as supreme, when Vishnu came, Lord Shiva offered obeisances to Vishnu, Shiva Prabhupada said. So these are some lessons of the many lessons. All these purports are full of lessons, but I especially noticed in these particular verses there were many, many lessons. So now we can continue the discussion.
Can I ask a simple question?
1 minute.
In the verse, once we get started.
Now I know that discussion. I had to stop. What's the significance of the analogy of just like a water in a lake is cleansed by autumn rains? It's mentioned in the purport. Okay, read the purport. In the rainy season, the reservoirs of water become dirty and muddy. But as soon as the autumn rain comes, all the water immediately becomes clear and transparent. Similarly, although Daksha's heart was impure because of his having slandered Lord Shiva, for which he was severely punished, Daksha now came to consciousness, and just by seeing Lord Shiva with veneration and respect, he became immediately purified. That's Vrindavan. If you go to a real monsoon place,
if you go down south,
I lived for 22 years in India where they have real monsoon, 4 months. So in the beginning it's muddy, and at the end, at the end of monsoon, autumn rains, it's not heavy rain. It's very, very light rain. And it's not like monsoon rain. Here it says autumn rain. So beginning of monsoon is real heavy. Like devastation, actually. Trees fall down, lights go out, and all that. But by the end of monsoon, you get, it's in the day, you get the little rain with a rainbow, and you can just go out in the rain, it doesn't bother you. You don't worry about it. So it's very gentle rain. And so it just, the mud settles to the bottom. And it's very clear, it purifies.
Another lesson.
Krishna consciousness always ends well. Yes. Sometimes. Vajrabihari wonders about that. Yes? You have no faith? Okay. Yes. Okay, any other questions besides the one about intelligence? We're having a lively discussion, but I had to stop it because I had to go on in the verses. In verse 5, where Prabhupada says, the brain substance does not determine the intelligence that person has, but it's actually the consciousness. So different devotees had different questions that they couldn't really understand. And Adi Purush was bringing up, and Bhagavat brought up a point about one man. They performed an autopsy, and they found he had no brain. It was just water inside. There was no brain there. And Adi Purush, but he was a normal person. And Adi Purush was saying, there are scientists say that some people have half a brain, Some people have no brain, it's like that, and they get brain damaged. So, and he was worried. He was saying, Guru Sevananda was saying, no, it must have some effect. You know, the different kinds of brains must have some effect on intelligence. Must be. So, and then we were going on and on. Okay, why some people have more, and some people, and Sankirtan answered that question that it's karma, due to karma.
And,
you're worried about it, yeah. But that wasn't that was not karma. That was special mercy of Lord Shiva. If he had got his karma, he would have suffered in hell for countless. Okay, next. Well, that's the law of karma. Some people are more covered, and some people are less covered. That's the same thing. So, what's your question? Or it's a comment. Comment. Okay, good. Yes, that was also stated by I think Adi or somebody on this side. I said that too. Somebody said.
Spiritual intelligence comes from the soul.
Right.
It's some symptom of consciousness.
Right.
So, changing brain, the head of Daksha, cannot be influenced on his consciousness or on his real spiritual intelligence.
Yeah, that's what Prabhupada said. Anyway, that is true, but his point was that we were asking how we can enhance our intelligence. So his point was to act in the mode of goodness.
Yes.
So in the mode of goodness, drinking milk is recommended as acting in the mode. Okay, next was, I forgot who.
Yeah. If you take the word real intelligence, Prabhupada says.
Real intelligence. Yeah.
That, if you look at that, then you replace it with an awareness, absolute consciousness.
Right. So Adi Purush, you had a comment. Both answers are true. Which both answers?
You can see that instances where intelligence does not depend on the brain.
Okay, we can see examples where intelligence does not depend upon the brain.
You can see instances where one's intelligence deteriorates as a result of brain damage or disease. Which
we can see also examples where the intelligence deteriorates due to brain damage. So therefore, it both influences and doesn't influence. So even point is that even if it does deteriorate, that will not harm your Krishna consciousness. You can still get around that somehow.
If Krishna consciousness is seen as free, for instance, or shraddha, or this kind of mysterious awareness of something else, it will not be.
And also if you waken up your inner consciousness, you can be inside. If your body's not working, you can be, you know, chanting Hare Krishna, you can be doing all sorts of things. Next, Maringopa. Yeah, the point from that we learned from Daksha is the intelligence does not ultimately depend. And one conclusion we reached also in our previous discussion is that the intelligence is coming from Paramatma. He is the form direction of intelligence. Prashanta. Right, because of the bad karma, he cannot use his intelligence. Right. Yes, so her point is that if there is such a dysfunction of the brain, it starts with the subtle, it manifests on the gross. Mm-hmm. So his devotional service was not harmed because he lost his part of his brain. So we should take hope from that in case we only have partial brains, that it doesn't matter. We can still be Krishna conscious. Yeah. Yes.
Because the example was that Daksha with the goat's head is able to function as a human being.
Right.
To speak and
offer prayers, speak as a human being.
Externally, so it wasn't just reflection of his
right.
Internal.
Yeah.
Which is the source. So even externally, we lose the way we function in the brain, which allows us to speak and move.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily reflect that internally.
Yes. So that's a good point. Because Daksha, he didn't lose it. He still was able to communicate and externally, but you're saying that Sometimes we may not be able to, but that doesn't mean we lose our Krishna consciousness. Yes, nothing to do with the external. Okay? Sankirtan does.
The same line, this experience of a devotee who underwent the severe, very strong malaria.
Malaria, right.
He came to Paritnama and he was praying for purification. So, at the end of the Paritnama, he was in the hospital, basically in a coma for many days.
You should give some.
Little hope for him.
Wow.
After when he came back, he said, I was always kind of conscious of what's going on with me, but my brain became also wild, so much hallucination. Because I was there, I knew I had been in this situation. He said, the strength to know that, he said, came from my sadhana. I realized that because I have been practicing my sadhana seriously.
Right.
But he said, I also realized it wasn't enough.
Okay, so but this devotee.
Krishna allowed me to continue in the body and continue to practice.
Right. So he was seeing, when sometimes when that happens, if you go into malaria, you lose your external functions. But you see you're different from the mind. The mind is crazy. And you see all the hallucinations. And you think, but you're watching it. And you're thinking, well, it's I'm watching this mind, the crazy mind. So it's not me.
He said that ability to watch, he said, it came from his practice.
So the ability to watch his mind came from his practice of sadhana. But it was not enough sadhana, so he had to come back and do some more. So he wasn't really Krishna, so he had to come back and finish. So we're always being given that chance, every day. That okay, you get another chance now to do your sadhana, purify your consciousness, if you're not ready. Matter comes from spirit, not spirit from matter. Before the matter is there, the real intelligence is there, okay? You have anything to say, Braj Bihar? No. Yeah, okay. Intelligence coming from consciousness. Not from matter. Okay, next. Cardiologist in Srila Prabhupada. Okay, so he was supporting one cardiologist who had vast experience was supporting Srila Prabhupada's explanation. Okay, last one, and then we're going to have a presentation by Guru Sevananda. No, you don't have to. They just have to look at it and. Okay. You want to say something? Even if we're rectified, even if we're rectified, still it may remain, and then he may again become degraded as he was before. Okay, so we have a presentation by Guru Sevananda on chapter 6.
This is the mind map that I prepared for the 6th chapter. Brahma satisfies Lord Shiva. I organize it by in sequence, shloka 1 to 7, 8 to 22, trying to break into sections. So the first section I call Brahma instructs the demigods, and first is explaining how Lord Vishnu and Lord Brahma, they are omniscient, they can understand past, present and future, therefore they didn't go to the, Brahma and Vishnu didn't go to the sacrifice. He teaches that the demigods cannot be happy if they perform sacrifice, but at the same time are offending the big Vaishnava. He tells them to beg forgiveness because Shiva is Ashutosh. Then next, there is the description of Kailas, his wonderful natural opulence, is almost like Krishna Loka. There is one shloka describing Kailas having desire trees, something which is only present in spiritual sky. And the next section is called Demigod's Trip. There is the nice example of Ganga and Alakananda rivers.
What do you mean by Demigod's Trip?
When they go with Lord Brahma, they travel to Kailas. They're traveling.
They're flying. They're flying.
They're flying
in their airplanes.
They're seeing all these things, and they see the river Nanda and Alakananda, which are called Tirthapada because are purified by the touch of the Lord's lotus feet. And explain that they are disturbed by sexual desire, even though they are not happy with this, but they have this disturbance, this bodily necessity. And this is the main difference on material world and spiritual world. Spiritual world, the, all the desires are for the pleasure of the Lord. In material world, you have this lust, which is so disturbing. Then the next section is Shiva's tree. They see Lord Shiva sitting under a very huge banyan tree, 800 miles high, 600 miles wide. And he's sitting surrounded by many sages, doing Mahayoga meditation and discussing with Narada. And the place was very suitable for meditation, because even though it was a big tree, there was no disturbance, no noise from birds or things like that. Very, very auspicious place. Then the demigods' prayers through Brahma, who was the mediator in this, their case. So Brahma starts saying that Lord Shiva is Jagato Yoni Bijayo. He's the father and mother of the universe. And therefore, he's invoking his mercy. Your father and mother, so be kind to your children. You're Vishvesh, you're the Lord of the universe. You're like a spider. So you create, you maintain, and you withdraw the universe as you like. Daksha is your agent, your representative for introducing Yajna. You created Varnashrama, and the Brahmanas are in charge of that, and they're following this rigidly. Your will is the ultimate judgment, therefore it's difficult to understand why sometimes pious people go to hell and sinful people like Ajamila, they are saved by your dutas, your messengers. And you're like Paramatma, therefore you should never be angry. You don't need to kill the envious, because they are already put, they are already dead because of their envy. And therefore be merciful. And Brahma concludes the last three shlokas, asking three benedictions. Take your share in sacrifice, restore everyone's health, and let the yajna be completed. Therefore, this is like a resume of the chapter. Another way to do that, I was thinking what I was making, was to separate four themes, like Prashanta Mataji did. She prepared two or three of these mind maps. So it would be possible also to divide differently, instead of putting the order, putting the themes. So.
Well, thank you very much. Okay. Any more comments or questions in this chapter? Also remember, on the 26th, we're going to, where are we going to? Dhruvatil. So whoever wants to give 150 rupees, I mean, who, everyone needs to give 150 rupees for transportation if you want to go to Adipurusha. That's a week from Monday. We're going to go to Dhruvatil. Okay, all glories to Shri Prabhupada.